This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. The morning round continues. I'm Sharad Kutin. Now, yesterday, the Home Minister confirmed that the three Turkish men detained over national security concerns will be deported to Turkey if found guilty. This despite pleas from their families to be sent to a third country instead. The men were arrested earlier this month under the Special Offences Act, or SOSMA, which allows for detention without charge for up to 28 days. In response to the arrest, the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights expressed its concern about possible deportation, which now seems imminent. Jeremy Lawrence, an officer with the Office of the Human Rights Commission, the High Commissioner for Human Rights Regional Office in Bangkok, explains why it's concerned.
Our concerns are that they may have been that these men may have been targeted over their suspected links to the Gulen movement, which, as you know, is accused of being behind a coup attempt in Turkey last year. Now, last year there was a similar case in Malaysia in October, when two other Turkish nationals were detained in Malaysia and they were sent back the following day. We know both of those men were subsequently arrested upon their return to Turkey, and they remain in detention there without trial.
That was Jeremy Lawrence with the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights Regional Office in Bangkok. Now, on the line is Serkan Yalakan. He is a research associate at the National University of Singapore. He's here to help us understand some of the ways in which the media is framing the story. It's a story that's traveled quite a bit. Good morning, Serkan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Sharad. Thank you for having me.
I don't know if you heard that just now, the UN officer explaining that there might be, and this is a subject to some speculation, the reason for the arrest of those three individuals has to do with the exiled Turkish preacher Fethullah Gulen. Now, is this a legitimate frame, without making reference to these three particular individuals, a legitimate frame to understand what's going on? And is the Turkish government that interested to pursue its rivals in foreign countries? I mean, is there the long hand of Turkey behind this somehow?
Yes, it is a legitimate frame. We don't know enough information about the cases of these three individuals. What we know is that among the arrested is the head of an international school and the other is a businessman. And correct me if I'm wrong, they seem to have some sort of connection. And this fits the general pattern in which the Gulen community has been organizing itself abroad. It's very likely that these are Gulen-affiliated individuals. And Erdogan has every reason to go after them because basically Gulen has been accused of plotting the coup attempt in 2016. But even the rivalry between Gulen and Erdogan goes way back, even to 2000. But it was in 2013 when Erdogan was hit by a series of corruption charges against his cabinet that was brought by or orchestrated by the Gulenists, who organized themselves within the judiciary and the police force. This was the end of 2013, which brought the fight out into the open months before the presidential elections in 2014. And having survived the scandal, Erdogan won the presidential elections and then began to purge Gulenists from the police force and the judiciary. So the fight has been going on since the end of 2013, very openly. The coup attempt, shocking as it was, and I know that in the West people are very skeptical about the Gulen's hand in it, but the overwhelming evidence and the way it is seen in Turkey and the overwhelming evidence that were collected after the attempt point to Gulen, a big portion of the pushes being Gulen-affiliated people. So the coup attempt, shocking as it was the culmination of a rift that, you know, first surfaced in early 2012 when a Gulen-affiliated prosecutor attempted to interrogate Erdogan's intelligence chief. And in response, Erdogan set out to close down the prep schools that had been the Gulenist main recruiting ground. So it has been a quite sort of fierce, messy fight that has been going on in Turkey. And since 2013, Erdogan went after Gulenist empire abroad by pressuring governments to close down Gulen-affiliated establishments, basically schools and businesses. And he has been partially successful. For example, in countries like Pakistan, he has been totally successful. All the schools are closed. In Azerbaijan, most of the schools are closed. In Africa, he's having a bit of difficulty because these schools are also are the best schools in those countries, producing the future elites in those countries. So the leaders, the governments in many African countries are reluctant to follow Erdogan's request. So this is the sort of general big fight, the sort of big picture. And Malaysia is obviously part of it. And given what seems to be good relations between the leaderships of two countries, this is hardly surprising for me.
Now, could you explain the fact? I understand that Fethullah Gulen and Erdogan were in fact associates, or they were allies at a particular point in their political trajectory. What soured it? I mean, it seems you explained that the immediate occasion was a Gulen-associated prosecutor, but even that seems to be odd to me. I would have thought that the judiciary and the prosecutorial services are professional. They're above politics. They don't involve people with political alliances. Could you explain some of that confusion to me?
Yes, obviously. Yes, that's what you would expect ideally. But what happened is when so we need to go a little bit back when the AK Party was founded. It was founded by those who broke away from the toppled Islamists and their anti-Western rhetoric. This is 2013. But the party was still defenseless in its early years against the secularist bloc that remained suspicious of them. So wary of a Kemalist-secularist comeback, Erdogan turned to the Gulen community for well-educated, pious cadres to populate the state bureaucracy, partly because the Islamists didn't have those well-educated cadres to basically replace the Kemalists, but the Gulen community had been by then producing those this new sort of Muslim youth, Muslim generation, well-educated in Western sciences and so on, for about more than two decades, and they had been doing that not only in Turkey but also abroad. So they had a huge network by the time Erdogan came into power. So seeing the Gulenists as his ally against the Kemalist grip of the Turkish state, Erdogan basically swung the doors open to the Gulenists, who thereby augmented their presence across the state bureaucracy. So their collaboration went into full gear following the 2007 elections, which gave Erdogan a clear victory. And soon afterwards came the, you may remember, the Ergenekon trials, which undermined the military's role in politics, and 2010 constitutional referendum in Turkey, which broke the Kemalist hold over the judiciary. So by the time of the Arab Spring, a new conservative state elite had replaced the Kemalists through a series of reforms and trials that were observed as part of Turkey's democratization process at the time. So what has had the semblance of democratization was about Kemalists being replaced by Gulenists mostly under Erdogan's very eyes, but Erdogan never knew at the time, or guessed or anticipated, that Gulenists would have a further agenda that would clash with his. And this began immediately after 2010 constitutional referendum.
Very quickly, Serkan, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights says they're concerned that that these men, if deported, will not get a fair trial in Turkey. The numbers are extraordinary in terms of how many people have been sacked from the state bureaucracy, 7,000 academics, 4,300 judges and prosecutors sacked since the failed coup, 150 media outlets shut down. The numbers are staggering. Is this concern about a lack of ability to access justice in Turkey today a legitimate one?
It is a legitimate one, but it is not specific to the Gulenists. In Turkey, it's interesting because in Turkey, with each turn, we have the winners and the losers. So in the previous stages, Gulenists were the winners. And the Kemalists had the same concern. And many of the liberals and Democrats in Turkey actually closed their eyes and ears thinking about the big picture, which was that Turkey was being democratized. So, yes, there could have, you know, there would be some mistakes in the judiciary and the police force, but these trials and reforms were necessary, so we had to just move on. In a similar way, I think in Turkey, there is little concern for the fairness of these trials when it comes to Gulenists, because Gulenists they don't have any social ground in Turkey. They are called FETÖ, which basically is an abbreviation for Fethullahist Terrorist Organization. So this is how they are referred to in Turkey now, and they have they've lost all the legitimacy, if they had any, by 2016. And Kemalists, Islamists, and liberals and nationalists, almost in a very rare moment of consensus, were against the Gulenist coup attempt. That's how they saw it. And so there is concern, yes. It's not specific to Gulenists. There are a number of other peoples, leftists and so on, are also being targeted during the state of emergency. But in Turkey, given the dynamics, given the history of this movement and how it the movement was involved in the movement itself was involved in victimizing a lot of people, they have little they draw little compassion.
Thank you very much, Serkan Yolakan, as research associate at the National University of Singapore, talking about political developments in Turkey. Han, you know, just listening to that is an extraordinary story of political dynamics. Have you been following the Turkish story at all?
Well, a little bit, no. But again, the details, at least to me, are rather sketchy, you know. I mean, but I've got the rough framework here. But I think that the question as I'm going through this story here is this, though, whether Malaysia actually has the resources to actually be caught up in these kind of geopolitical concerns or conflicts that are happening beyond our shores, though, because it's not just this Turkish instance. You know, we saw what happened with the North Korean assassination as well. You know, it's taking up a lot of our time and resources. So I wonder if the whole ministry, you know, really has that right, or, you know, or even has the resources, right, to be dedicated towards looking out for these Turkish detainees.
Well, we'll see what happens if, in fact, the three individuals are deported. We'll be coming back to that story and following it over time. Next up, we have more business news after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.